July 10th, 2022. My name is Critch, and you are tuned into Canadian Patriot Radio. It's a brand new song from Parkland Drive. A buddy of mine turned me onto them the other day, and I like their sound. Speaking of which, I'm seeing that I'm getting a lot of pushback from Spotify because I'm using copyrighted music for my openings. So I'm probably going to have to stop doing that. So if you're listening to the podcast on Apple iTunes or Google Play or any of those, iHeartRadio, any of those, you're probably noting that the succession of episodes is starting to be disrupted because they've hit me with a couple recently, two or three actually. So they're on to me now, so I'm going to probably just have to go to a generic opening, which kind of sucks because it always sets the tone, the music of the show. So, but it is what it is. We'll see if they keep coming at me or not. So the Georgia Guidestones blew up. What do you guys think of that? Very interesting in the least. Very weird that there's no footage of whoever set the charge or whatever it was. I've been hearing reports that it was Tannerite. You know, there's 24-hour surveillance on the Georgia Guidestones, so it's very odd that there's absolutely no footage whatsoever of someone actually setting. Like, if it was Tannerite, it would have took a whole shit ton of it. And if it was, and there's a lot of theories out there that it was the globalists themselves blew up their own monument. I'm sure by now all of you have heard every theory there is. The numerologists have come out and say all the numbers line up perfectly for all the satanic weirdness that we see all the time. But when it comes to numerology, I'm a little bit skeptical of it because you can always bend or mold the numbers however you want. You guys know what I'm talking about when they talk about specific dates and then they do a bunch of math and then it adds up and blah, blah, blah. I've always kind of been, okay, like there are certain specific things in numerology you can't deny. But this just kind of seems, okay, well, whatever. Like, so I don't know. I honestly can't tell you if they blew it up themselves. If they did, they would have done a better job. I mean, we're talking about the people that made the Twin Towers fall within their own footprint perfectly. So you're telling me they couldn't blow up four granite slabs in the middle of nowhere in Georgia perfectly? And so I don't know. I don't know what to think of that. I'm just glad they're gone. In the end, I'm just really glad that the outline for the globalists that has been written on granite tablets in Georgia is now gone. Because that was just a flex, if you want my honest to God opinion. All right, my friends, we're going to open with an article from CTV News Calgary. And the title reads, Deaths with Unknown Causes Now Alberta's Top Killer. Unknown Causes. This is by Nicole DiDonato. And it was written on July 6, 2022. Alberta is now reporting an unprecedented increase in ill-defined and unknown causes of death in 2021. The category is leading the way over dementia, which has been the top spot since, which has been in the top spot since 2016, and COVID-19, which began adding to the death tally in the province in a big way in 2020. In 2021, ill-defined and unknown causes of death snagged top's first spot with 3,362, up from 1,464 in 2020 and 522 the year before that. According to statistics from the government of Alberta, the unknown causes of death category has only began appearing on the list in 2019. There is no record of it ranking before then, dating back to 2001. I think it's probably multifactorial, so there's probably many things playing into that, said Dr. Daniel Gregson, an associate professor in the Cummings School of Medicine at the University of Calgary, specializing in infectious diseases and microbiology. Gregson believes those factors include lack of resources to determine the cause of death in certain cases, delayed access to healthcare services, and post-COVID complications. No mention of vaccine complications or side effects right there, but let's definitely not go towards the obvious here. We have the impression of surviving COVID and that's the end of it, but that's not necessarily true, he told CTV News. Gregson points to a large study out of the U.S. that found people who've had COVID are at higher risk of heart disease, stroke, pulmonary embolisms, and death compared to those who haven't been infected. The risk is even higher for those who end up in hospital or the ICU with COVID. There's another study that actually completely contradicts that, and it's out of the U.S. as well, and it basically says that people that have had COVID, especially unvaccinated people that have had COVID, are not in this unknown death category. They're not dying. They're not getting exactly what he just said. There's nothing happening to the unvaccinated. So let's just go ahead and call bullshit on that one. We do expect that there will be deaths that aren't directly related to COVID, but indirectly related to COVID to occur after the diagnosis in patients after the first month of infection, he said. One would expect that some of the patients are going to survive the COVID and then die at home from other complications. Nope. Not buying it. Alberta Health and the Medical Examiner's Office said they are looking into the data but have yet to provide an explanation for the sudden spike in deaths of unknown causes. Well, geez, it wouldn't exactly coincide with the huge increase in death in working-age people that the American insurance companies started reporting in the last quarter of 2021. It wouldn't have nothing to do with that, would it? Because the insurance companies seem to have the ability to be a lot more honest than our own medical industry when it comes to this. Dementia was the second leading cause of death in Alberta in 2021. COVID-19 took the third spot. COVID-19 deaths increased to 1,950 last year from 1,084 in 2020 when the pandemic began. COVID is still quite high up there as we expected. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to actually eliminate COVID deaths in the province, despite our availability of vaccines. So that's a bit disappointing, Gregson said. Well, because people that are double and triple vaccinated are the ones that are dying, you fucking fuckstick. Jesus, what a moron. He said stricter restrictions in 2020 helped prevent transmission and kept case numbers low, while in 2021 cases were much higher, but vaccine availability helped reduce the number of deaths. Bull! Complete bull! I think the fact that the number is not in the top spot is essentially a medical miracle in the U.S., being able to get out vaccines in less than 18 months to the average person in Canada. Oh, this guy is just 100%. Like, he didn't just drink the Kool-Aid. This guy put his head right into the barrel and just started slurping through his mouth and nose. Like, he is 100% globalist narrative bought and sold. Hook, line, and sinker. This guy can't see it any other way. He's got the blinders on. He's only staring straight. I will tell them whatever you tell me. You go ahead and tell me what to tell them. And just keep those paychecks rolling in. I'll tell you what. While I'm at it, I'll just claim every death in my hospital was a COVID death so I can get those kickbacks too. This is one of those guys. Wow. Gregson said while vaccines lower the risk of death, it's still important to be vigilant. He warns that there could be another spike in COVID cases in the coming months based on what's happening in other parts of Canada and around the world. Chronic excuse me, ischemic heart disease was the fourth leading cause of death in the province in 2021 at 1,939. It was ranked in the top spot from 2001 to 2015. After that is malignant neoplasms of the trachea, bronchus, and lungs, 1,552. Acute myocardial infarction, 1,075. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, 1,028. Diabetes mellitus, 728. Stroke, 612. And accidental poisoning by and exposure to drugs and other substances was 604. Anyway, nice to read an article with a completely hypnotized doctor that is pushing the narrative 100%, but there is no way around the fact that they are completely avoiding the blatant, obvious connection between rising deaths, unknown deaths, and the vaccine rollout. Anybody with any type of discernment can make that connection, except for this fool. Dr. Daniel Gregson, an associate professor in the Cummings School of Medicine at the University of Calgary. This guy, hook, line, and sinker, globalist narrative, he's on it. He's on it. Anyway, my friends, let's get the show started. We'll be right back. Welcome, friends, to Canadian Patriot Radio, where conspiracy is not theory and political corruption finds the spotlight. CPR, we are committed to upholding Canadians' God-given rights to life, liberty, and freedom with all thy sons. Command. All right, welcome back, my friends. Before we get into the next one, I just kind of want to point out and apologize to the fact that I'm being a little bit sparse on the shows lately. Now me and the fam are up camping, and also haying season is going to start this week, so it's probably going to be limited. It's going to be one episode a week for the next little bit until I get back home and I'm done haying. So my apologies, but it's probably just going to be one a week for the time being. Probably the next couple weeks anyway, my friends. And if I can get in here a little more often, I will, but it's just I'm just running like a chicken with my head cut off lately, and trying to enjoy a bit of summer on top of it. So all right, let's get into the next one. This comes to us by way of the Epic or Epoch Times, whichever suits your bill. And the title reads, Rogers CEO apologizes for outage, says it came after network maintenance update. This was written on July 9th, 2022 by the Canadian Press. The fallout from a massive network outage at Rogers Communications that shut down mobile and internet services across much of Canada continued to come into focus on Saturday, even as the company restored most services and began offering an explanation as to what happened. The widespread disruption, which got underway early Friday morning, paralyzed communications across sectors including health, healthcare, law enforcement, and the financial industry. Many 911 services couldn't receive incoming calls, and several hospitals reported impacts to their services. And debit transactions were paused when Interact was knocked offline. Small business owners were among those hardest hit by the outage, which left them unable to process debit card payments. Sheriff Ahmed, the owner of Plant for Soul Plant Shop in Toronto's West End, said the outage left him feeling helpless as he turned away customers who didn't have cash. "It pretty much stopped my business," he said in an interview Saturday. "Most of the people, they do not use cash anymore, so pretty much I sat down in my office doing nothing. Abruptly losing the ability to take card payments is a big problem," he said. "We just can't stop. We're paying rent and everything." At nearby Cake Coffee, owner Supreet Arora said customers came in thinking it was just their Wi-Fi and cell phones that were affected, only to find out that the cafe also had no Wi-Fi. "They came in, you want to help them out, but there's no Wi-Fi here," he said. He said he kept forgetting to tell people he was only able to take cash until after he'd made their food. He'd serve them anyway, adding many patrons later returned to settle their bills. Rogers Chief Executive Officer Tony Stafiri issued a statement on Saturday afternoon saying services had been restored and the company's networks and systems are close to fully operational. He said the company is continuing to monitor its networks for problems and investigate the root cause of the issue. "We now believe we've narrowed the cause to a network system failure following a maintenance update in our core network, which caused some of our routers to malfunction early Friday morning." You know, I'm just going to question, you know, of course they're going to say it's something internal and it was that, but what are the odds that maybe Rogers got hacked? Maybe someone got to Rogers and hacked them and wanted Canadians to see just how helpless they would be in a cashless society. That's my honest to God opinion. I bet you dollars to donuts that they were hacked. And someone was like, someone needs to wake these Canadians up, because they all are walking around with debit cards in their pockets and they don't even realize how close they are to a digitalized society where everything is tied together, your health records and all. You guys all know what the digital ID is. But what I'm getting at here is how quick did you realize on Friday, holy smokes, I'm going to need some cash in my pocket because it's looking like the debit machines are down. Like, I was seeing friends in BC. I was seeing friends in BC all the way out to New Brunswick telling me the same thing. So then right away I knew, okay, this isn't going to be a quick deal. And like I mentioned earlier, we're camping right now. Well, I need to stop and grab this and grab that, and I don't have access to debit. So luckily, with my bank, the machines at the bank were still working and people from that branch could withdraw funds from their own, or you could just go in. Like, I went in first and they're like, nope, the ATMs here work for our customers. So what I did was I just grabbed cash. So what I'm kind of getting at here is I think this was a huge wake-up call for people, and just to point out how absolutely dependent we are on this system. But anyway, let's carry on. Stafiri apologized for the outage, adding that we're particularly troubled that some customers could not reach emergency services and we are addressing that issue as an urgent priority. Richard LeBlanc, a professor of governance, law, and ethics at Toronto's York University, said the outage presents a learning opportunity for threat actors such as Russian state-sponsored hackers. Oh boy. He said such parties can now see how vulnerable the Canadian industry, financial institutions, and healthcare systems are to an attack on a telecom provider. I'm willing to bet that this was a hack already. This could have been catastrophic for the country if this was a threat actor, he said in a telephone interview. LeBlanc said the outage, Rogers' second significant one in 15 months, makes it clear that the federal government can't just rely on the telecom companies to do the right thing. I think it's time that regulators, and this includes Industry Canada, the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, and the Competition Tribunal, begin to insist on proper, robust, independently audited internal controls so that you don't have an outage like this one, he said. Well, Industry Minister Francois-Philippe Champagne has described the outage as unacceptable. LeBlanc said that that kind of talk needs to be followed up with action. I think regulators have the authority. They have the power. The question is, do they have the courage to use it, he said. CRTC spokeswoman Patricia Valadio said the telecom regulator is in contact with Rogers. Holy, tripping over my tongue today. Sorry, my friends. Right now, our focus is on the outage and recovering from it, she wrote in an email. When it is over, we will take all necessary action to examine what occurred and put in place the necessary measures to prevent it from happening again. No, you won't. You guys are actually all starting to look at people like me, and what you're focusing on is probably punishing the providers that have my content on their sites and are basically effectively going to silence any dissenting voices to the fascist Sieg Heil liberal government we've got in Canada. They're not going to do anything about Rogers because Rogers pays all their wages. According to NetBlocks, a United Kingdom-based organization that monitors cybersecurity, the outage knocked out over 25% of Canada's observable internet connectivity at its peak. Rogers said it will proactively credit customers for the outage, but provided no details about the amount. The company said it is aware of spam text messages claiming to offer the credit and noted customers would be credited automatically. LeBlanc said he expects to see class action lawsuits as well as legal action from individual firms which will attempt to quantify the cost of the outage. Lawyers are good at that, so if there's a class action, they can measure the loss of productivity, the opportunity cost of not being able to work, missed meetings, missed opportunities, missed contracts. It is significant, he said. If all of these millions of people lose a day in their working life, they're not going to be made whole by a credit. Rogers did not reply to multiple requests for comment on Saturday from the Canadian press about the number of customers affected and the credit that customers will receive. Well, it's going to be astronomical because it was coast to coast to coast. But my question is why does Rogers have the monopoly over the entire country? Like, this should have been limited to at least small areas provincially. Like, each provincial government should be saying, okay, you can have this corner, you can have this corner, you can have this corner, you can have this corner. This is highlighting the fact that you've got a monopoly by one company over the entire country. And they get hit with a hack, or maybe it was a malfunction. We're not just going to exclude that. Maybe it was. Maybe there was an update that screwed everything up. We've all seen that enough in the digital world where you update something and then it completely fucks it right up and it doesn't work right and then they have to pull it back. So maybe it is. It could be very real that it is. I'm just speculating when I say that it could have. I'm just speculating that a hack seems highly likely to just show everybody, hey man, you need to make sure that you're not in a digital world because this is how quickly and easily this could happen to all of you, like it did on Friday and part of Saturday. So, very interesting to say the least. Yeah, I don't think I have much more to add to that one, to tell you the truth. All right, staying on the topic of complete and utter failures, let's focus on the ArriveCan app. Now, this next one comes to us by way of the Globe and Mail. And the title reads, Ottawa under pressure to cancel ArriveCan app, increase airport staffing as travel chaos continues. This was written by Janice Dixon and Michelle Carbert, and it was published on July 4th, 2022. The federal government is facing increased pressure to axe its ArriveCan app and increase staffing in an attempt to address the chaos plaguing Canada's major airports where travelers face delays and canceled flights. For weeks, many have wound up stranded for hours at Canadian airports, most often Toronto Pearson International. This past weekend, Canadian airlines and airports had more flight delays than nearly any other country in the world. The blame is falling on staff shortages and the ArriveCan app, which was implemented for travelers to prove they are vaccinated and that they have a quarantine plan if they contract COVID-19. Mark Weber, president of the Customs and Immigration Union, said he believes that the lack of frontline staff, ArriveCan, and the over-reliance on technology in general are contributing to the delays. What we are seeing specifically on the customs side is really long delays for travelers to clear customs when they are coming into the country, he said. Mr. Weber said the number of frontline staff has decreased steadily over the years. Add to that, travelers face challenges when using the ArriveCan app, which does take a lot of travelers quite a bit of time to fill out. They're just going to completely, of course, the Globe and Mail is going to completely ignore the fact that the major reason there's staff shortages is because they cut how much of their employees because they wouldn't take their globalist poison. They would not get vaccinated. That's the biggest reason. But they won't admit that. Mr. Weber said he would like to see the federal government hire 2,000 to 3,000 frontline officers across the country who would staff different ports of entry, including marine and land. When it comes to ArriveCan, he said, the questions could be streamlined on the app to help speed things up. For instance, he said travelers should not have to input the address of where they are staying if there is no contact tracing. The app can also be hard to navigate for people who aren't tech savvy, he said. Melissa Lantzman, conservative transport critic, said Canada's airports have become an international embarrassment. She said, rather than continuing to blame travelers and airlines, Transport Minister Omar Al-Gabra and the Liberal government need to take responsibility. Conservatives continue to call for a return to a pre-pandemic travel rules and staffing levels to help alleviate delays and disarray. We continue to see it at Canada's airports, including ending the mandatory usage of the ArriveCan app. NDP transport critic Taylor Bachrach said the Liberals failed to act even though they had months to prepare for travel to return and now are scrambling to hire screening officers. The government needs to accelerate the hiring of new staff to address shortages and ensure that workers are being paid adequately and treated fairly. Last month, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau established a new task force of cabinet ministers to improve government services such as passport processing and monitor the situation at airports. In a statement Monday, co-chair and woman and gender equality minister Marcy Lenz's office said the task force has met and is working to find solutions to respond to gaps in service delivery. Right. Gender equality. Women and gender equality minister. All right. Alexander Cohen, a spokesperson for Public Safety Minister Smirk Guy, Marco Medicino, whose office is responsible for ArriveCan, said the app helps make traveling easier and more efficient, allowing those entering Canada to electronically submit their information before arriving at the border. He said it also provides CBSA agents with the tools to ensure the travelers are processed quickly and safely. Mr. Cohen said its use is extremely high, and according to their statistics, 99.7% of air travelers and 94.1% of land travelers successfully used it. Because they have no choice. They're acting like you have a choice. I guess you still don't need it, but they're going to scold you at the border and try and make you feel lesser than, and then quarantine you for 14 days because you're a filthy unvaccinated human. Global travel volumes are up 700% since its low point during the pandemic, and airports across the world are feeling the impact. From too many flights to not enough staff, there is no single reason for these delays, but the ArriveCan app is not a major factor, he said. Yeah, like fuck it isn't. Mr. Cohen said the CBSA is making significant efforts to add resource and streamline processes to help keep people moving, including new kiosks at major airports, including Toronto Pearson, and hiring more than 700 student border officers for the summer. Valerie Glazer, communications director for Mr. Al-Gabra, said in a statement that delays at airports are completely unacceptable. She said Ottawa is meeting with airports, airlines, and relevant government agencies to find solutions to address bottlenecks. Ms. Glazer said the Canadian Air Transport Security Authority has hired more than 1,000 new screeners in airports. We are making progress, but challenges remain, particularly for travelers facing flight cancellations and issues with baggage services. She said Mr. Al-Gabra met with the chief executive officers of the Greater Toronto Airports Authority and WestJet last week and the CEO of Air Canada Monday to discuss the problem. When it comes to the app, travelers are divided. Payman Parasayan, an Edmonton-based oil and gas project manager, said he traveled internationally more than 50 times since downloading the ArriveCan last year. He said he is puzzled as to why Canada still uses it, given that border agents only ask to see the app on his phone about one-third of the time he's returned to Canada. It's been fairly infrequent that I've checked and I've landed back in Canada through Pearson, Toronto, Calgary, Vancouver, and Montreal. It just seems to be hit or miss with with whether the CBSA officer is going to ask for the ArriveCan app or not, he said. From my perspective, the app is completely useless. Alex Sharon, a mother of two from Port Moody, BC, says she feels like she is one of the few supporters of the app. She crosses the land border in Surrey, BC about 8 times a month to take her children to see their father in Washington. She said he has found she has found ArriveCan useful because it simplifies the documentation for her children who were vaccinated in the US and only have American vaccine certificates to come back to Canada. What is the ArriveCan app actually protecting from? So let's just take a 40,000 foot view here. COVID is everywhere. COVID is in Canada, COVID is in US, COVID is in the UK, COVID is everywhere in the entire world. So what are you protecting people from? Why would you have to have a trace app on your phone to make sure that you are not that you don't have or get and spread COVID? Let's just think about this for a minute. The vaccinated get and spread COVID just as effectively as the unvaccinated, yet we're pretending that they don't. And COVID is everywhere in the world. So what is the purpose of this app other than tracking and tracing Canadian civilians? There isn't one. It's the first step to a digital ID. That's exactly what this is. They're trying to normalize a digital ID. And personally, I don't see any point to it whatsoever. There is no actual reasonable reason for this app. There isn't. You have passports. And you have records of any time you go to the US and back. They have all that. There is no point to have this on your phone other than to track you 100% all your movements wherever you go. Even if you shut the app, heavy air quotes, off and say it's not tracking you, it's still going to be doing that. There is no point to this app whatsoever, my friends. You and I both know it. All right, my friends, I want to turn your attention over to a global news article next. And this one is titled, Canadian scientist says he's found a huge ozone hole over the tropics. This is written by Michelle Butterfield, and it was posted July 6, 2022. A Canadian scientist says he's discovered a massive hole in the ozone layer over the tropical region of the planet that could impact 50% of the world's population. Qingbin Liu, a professor at the University of Waterloo, says the hole is 7 times the size of the well-known Antarctic ozone hole that emerges during spring. The findings were published in the Journal of AIP Advances. Through his research, Liu claims he found the massive hole is present year-round and has been there since the 1980s, approximately 40 years. Its presence could have devastating consequences for life on Earth, he warns. The tropics constitute half the planet's surface area and are home to about half the world's population, said Liu in a press release. The existence of a tropical ozone hole may cause a great global concern. The tropics are regions of Earth across the middle of the globe, including the equator and parts of North America, South America, Africa, Asia, and Australia. The depletion of the ozone layer can lead to increased ground-level UV radiation, which can increase skin cancer and cataracts in humans, as well as weaken human immune systems, decrease agricultural productivity, and negatively affect sensitive aquatic organisms and ecosystems, he said. The ozone layer is a natural layer of gas in Earth's stratosphere, and it's crucial to sustaining life on Earth as it protects us and other life from the sun's damaging ultraviolet radiation. The process of ozone formation and destruction is ongoing, but researchers in the 1970s found that certain industrial chemicals, including chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs, agents in some aerosol sprays and refrigerants, among others, can accelerate degradation. The theory was backed up by the confirmation of the Arctic ozone hole in 1985. We're just going to call BS on that. We're going to go through something else after this, but that's complete BS. That's a cover story, is what that is. Governments at the time were quick to ban many of the damaging chemicals, and last year, the United Nations Environmental Program reported that discontinued use of these chemicals was helping heal the ozone layer. Liu and his team say they've identified this latest hole by examining average annual ozone changes, differences in annual ozone climatology, and changes in temperature over the last few decades. But his findings have come as a shock to other scientists whose conventional photochemical modeling did not show the large gap. This new discovery, if true, negates much of what science has learned about ozone holes. Multiple researchers have cast doubt on the study, saying Liu's methods were flawed. Paul Young, a researcher at Lancaster University and a lead author of the latest scientific assessment of ozone depletion, told the Science Media Center that Liu looked at percentage changes in ozone rather than absolute changes. There is no tropical ozone hole driven by the author's proposed electrons from cosmic rays or otherwise. The long-term changes and year-to-year variability of the ozone layer in the tropical lower stratosphere are well understood to be the result of both human-driven processes and natural and natural drivers, Young said. The author's identification of a tropical ozone hole is down to him looking at percentage changes in ozone rather than absolute changes, with the latter being much more relevant for damaging UV reaching the surface. Interestingly, his article also does not draw from the vast literature that explores and documents ozone trends in all regions of the atmosphere. Marty Chipperfield, a professor of atmospheric chemistry at the University of Leeds, told Science Media Center that he was surprised that the study was published at all in its current form. Well, so you got guys running cover for this already. The result of this work will be highly controversial, and I'm not convinced they are correct, he said. The claim of in this research of such a large ozone changes in the tropic have not been apparent in other studies, which makes me very suspicious. Science should never depend on just one study, as this new work needs careful verification before it can be accepted as fact. So what I'm getting at by bringing this to you is they still are basing their theories on holes in ozone on the use of CFCs and other likely man-made conditions that could be depleting the ozone. But they never look at real things that are being done, such as geoengineering, my friends. Now, I'm going to direct your focus to a U.S. patent. This is U.S. patent 4686605A. Now, go ahead and look that up on Google, and you'll see what I'm about to read you. Here's the abstract. This is what this patent is. Method and apparatus for altering a region in the Earth's atmosphere, ionosphere, and or magnetosphere. A method and apparatus for altering at least one selected region which normally exists above the Earth's surface. The region is excited by electron cyclotron resonance heating to thereby increase its charged particle density. In one embodiment, circulatory polarized electromagnetic radiation is transmitted upward in a direction substantially parallel to and along a field line which extends through the region of plasma to be altered. The radiation is transmitted at a frequency which excites electrons, cyclotron resonance to heat up and accelerate the charged particles. This increase in energy can cause ionization of the neutral particles, which are then absorbed as part of the region, thereby increasing the charged particle density of the region. So right here, you've got an admittance that they are actually shooting directed energy weapons at our ionosphere or our ozone layer. But let's not ever take that into account when we start talking about holes in the ozone. What we're going to do is we're going to blame the common folk for using technology and resources made available to them by the very people that are now slapping their hands for using it. Let's just get into a little bit more. Description, technical field. This invention relates to blah, 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 blah. We already read that. Background art. In the late 1950s, it was discovered that naturally occurring belts exist at high altitudes above the Earth's surface. It is now established that these belts result from charged electrons and ions becoming trapped along the magnetic lines of force field lines of the Earth's essentially dipole magnetic field. The trapped electrons and ions are confined along the field lines between two magnetic mirrors which exist at spaced apart points along these field lines. The trapped electrons and ions move in helical paths around their particular field lines and then bounce back and forth between the magnetic mirrors. These trapped electrons and ions can oscillate along the field lines for a long period of time. In the past several years, a substantial effort has been made to understand and explain the phenomena involved in belts of trapped electrons and ions to explore possible ways to control and use this phenomena for beneficial purposes. For example, in the late 1950s and early 1960s, both the United States and USSR detonated a series of nuclear devices of various yields to generate large numbers of charged particles at various altitudes, example 200 kilometers or greater. So you're setting off nukes in the ozone layer, but yet you're blaming the common folk for using hairspray with CFC in it. They did that in the 50s and 60s. Just to point that out. This was done in order to establish and study artificial belts of trapped electrons and ions. These experiments established at the least of the extraneous electrons and ions from the detonated devices did become trapped along field lines in the Earth's magnetosphere to form artificial belts which were stable for prolonged periods of time. For a discussion of these experiments, blah, 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 blah. So, oh my God. This is what happens when you have psychopaths running your military and space programs on your planet. You only have one planet. As far as we know, we can't survive anywhere else but here. But we've got psychopaths detonating nukes in our ozone layer just to see what the fuck happens. How does that make you feel, my friends? And then we've got everybody saying that it's CFCs. The reason there's holes in the ozone layer has nothing to do with directed energy weapons that we've been blasting, bouncing off of it for God knows how long. Not to mention spraying barium and aluminum along with a various assortment of other chemicals, very harmful to human beings. That has nothing to do with it either. Or HAARP. The HAARP would have absolutely nothing to do with it either. Right, my friends? For those of you that are unaware of what HAARP is, it's basically it's an abbreviation for the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. Geophysical weapon, so powerful, it could be classified as a weapon of mass destruction. So basically, HAARP stations look like power stations, but all they do is emit high frequencies into our stratosphere and ionosphere to manipulate weather. It's funded by the U.S. Air Force, and it's main base is in Fairbanks, Alaska. But they've got them all over the world. Now, some of you might have seen that the Brazilians, God bless their hearts, a couple years back, destroyed their HAARP station. Now, I couldn't even tell you where the HAARP stations are in Canada. They're probably up north in the middle of nowhere, and that's where they're emitting these frequencies are from, which probably, without a doubt, are harmful to you and me and to everything else on this planet. But they don't give a fuck. You know what? You know, like I said, this is what happens when you have psychopaths that run your planet. So I guess that article caught my eye because it just kind of made me giggle that they beat around the truth. They don't ever look at the obvious. This ties into what we covered earlier with the vaccines or with the spike in deaths in Alberta. Like they just do not have the ability to make the easiest connection possible, which is the most obvious, and it's blaringly, you know, standing right in front of them, staring them in the face, and they will look at any other reason, obviously because they're probably paid off. Hey, you know, you can blame this on whatever the hell you want. Just don't blame it on the one thing that's doing it. And it's so funny to see this behavior cross over from our professionals, heavy air quotes, our professionals, in the medical field and now science field. You know, it just goes to show that whoever has the most money can rewrite science and medicine how they see fit. And we know this in medicine. We knew that medicine was hijacked by the Rockefellers in what, the 40s, 30s, or 40s? So that's why you have doctors and scientists that do not, they will not, they absolutely refuse to just point at the obvious because it's their job. And I get that. I understand security. But at the same time, how far can you go along with a psychotic narrative before your own conscience starts screaming at you to wake up, stand up? Oh boy. Now, speaking of going along with narratives, Dr. Paul Alexander was in front of a group of MPs the other day, and he told everybody basically what is exactly happening. And it's a very powerful clip, so I want to play this. We're kind of bouncing back and forth into COVID, but whatever. Let's do it anyway. So let's listen to Dr. Paul Alexander telling members of parliament directly what is actually happening.
Around the middle of 2021, before even the fall, it was staggering. It showed us about four things. That small study showed us, one, all of the nurses were double vaccinated and they all became infected. That opened our eyes instantly that the vaccine was not stopping replication or transmission. Our public health officials in Canada knew that then, federal, provincial, city level. They knew that the vaccine mandates had no scientific basis. That study showed us a second thing. All of the nurses in that study were PPE'd. Full masks, full visors, full gowns. It showed us clearly that PPE in a hospital setting doesn't work. That study, supported one by Shitrit in Israel, showed that PPE in a hospital setting failed in nosocomial outbreak. It was supported by one by Hatimaki in Finland, also showed us nurses' PPE, full masks, full gowns, failed. Does not prevent transmission. That Ho Chi Minh study showed us a third thing. It showed us that double vaccinated nurses harbored massive amounts of virus in their nasopharyngeal passage, in their oral cavity, in their nostrils. It staggered us. It showed us that the vaccinated nurse and the unvaccinated nurse from an earlier outbreak with a different variant, the vaccinated nurse was far more infected. Our public health officials in Health Canada, in fact, knew that. They knew no mandate had any scientific basis. That is why the head epidemiologist at FAC can go on record saying we have no data to support the mandate. And that study showed us a fourth thing, which was even more frightening. We detected 251 times viral load in the nasopharyngeal passage of the vaccinated nurse than the unvaccinated nurse. It showed us that you, as someone in a hospital setting being cared for by a vaccinated nurse, then Omicron is even worse. You were at greater risk of becoming infected from a vaccinated nurse than an unvaccinated nurse. And I'll close by telling you something that our public health officials here did. You never got this information, so I came to talk about different things, but it's key that you understand. When they came to you and told you Canadians that this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, they misled you and they deceived you, because it had happened in America. CDC did it, so we followed here. What they did was this. They redefined what being vaccinated was. They told you that for that 14, 15-day period post-shot, you were still unvaccinated. And that was the key. Why did they do you that? So that the public health officials in Canada could come to you in the media and deceive the public and tell you that this was a pandemic of the unvaccinated. That was a falsehood, a gross falsehood. They were taking the vaccinated people who were becoming infected and hospitalized, and they were placing their events in the unvaccinated bucket just by a simple change in the definition. That is why somebody like me came today, so that I make sure that I share some information you didn't have. So when the media told you that we need to get all you vaccinated people, you unvaccinated people, vaccinated, the public health officials at Health Canada, in fact, knew it was a lie. I am telling you, they knew it was a falsehood. I will go as far as saying a lie, because they took all of the events and put it in the unvaccinated bucket. So you, the public, said, oh my God, all these vaccinated people are getting infected and hospitalized. I have to run and get a vaccine. You didn't understand that, no, those people were literally vaccinated. But FAC and Health Canada and CDC and FDA and NIH and NIAID and SAGE in England just tweaked the definition and told you, even at 8 days post-vaccine, you are not vaccinated. So even if you died from the vaccine, you were counted as an unvaccinated. And that particular fact doomed the information that you were getting. You needed to be properly informed, and you were never. The Canadian public never had the balanced, open, explicit, transparent, evidence-based medicine information it needed to make proper informed decisions. That's what we've been facing. So when James goes to march for all these miles, it's not because James doesn't have anything to do. It's because James understood the science too. And James understood something was wrong. And James understood that you can't be forcing our federal workers and our military and our police and our great nurses to be vaccinated by force when the data is problematic. The data cannot be substantiated. There was no sound justification for any of these vaccine mandates. And I'll go on record saying it. I will challenge anyone in the Public Health Agency of Canada. I will challenge Dr. Howard New. I will challenge Dr. Theresa Tam openly here to this legacy media. You meet me any place, anytime. You bring any of the data you have, any science. You bring the entire Public Health Agency of Canada and Health Canada to me. Meet me anywhere in Ottawa. Anyone in the provincial government or the city, come and bring your data. I will show you the global data that you did not inform the Canadian people about. You've been misleading them and you hurt people. So yes, we need a conversation. This must end. The vaccine mandates have no basis, and the emergency powers that you use to underpin them must be dropped, because there's no song justification for this anymore. Thank you.
Boom. I would say that Dr. Paul Alexander just put all the Canadian governments, members of government that have been pushing this, on notice. And the fact that he challenged all the public health officials to meet him anywhere, or in Ottawa in particular, that was just epic. You know, we, those of you that listen to the show and all of us in I guess this particular group have always kind of known what he said, but it's just nice to hear a doctor, taking it to the government in that fashion. It's really cool. But like, you know, like the theme of this show is basically they will always look away from the obvious when they're being paid. They always will. And that's it's just, these people have a serious morality problem. They do. And I mean, karma's paid. Karma's gonna have to be paid. Everybody that, you know, if you get away with it in this lifetime, you're gonna pay it in the next. I'm a firm believer of that you cannot escape karma. And the karma that these people have created by going along with a narrative that has now killed tens of thousands, well, probably millions when you really get right down to the brass tacks. Millions of people. How do you sleep at night? You have to be lying to yourself to sleep at night. It's just... Or you're just so naive or so bought into the narrative, like we've seen some of these people and some of these articles that have come out, and just they're just hook, line, and sinker right into it. Or they're paid off, right? That's the only other thing. And those are the people that I think would have a hard time sleeping. I don't know. If this ever gets out, I think you're going to see lots of suicides. Lots. or when this gets out, I should say. When all the information of this whole globalist poison experimental injection actually gets out. The fact that they manipulated laws and... you know, forced employers to force mandates on their employees, and they're just the liability that the people that push this, that they are now should be held accountable for, is unbelievable, my friends. But I guess it is what it is. Let's just see. Like, the world is changing rapidly, and I still think that the Great Awakening is outpacing the Great Reset, even though those on the other side, they're meeting in Davos and claiming victory, and they're so wrapped up in their own little elitist bubbles that they don't see what's actually happening in the world. they're going to march forward. They're still going to push forward with their digital ID. They're probably going to release some sort of new virus to try and keep us all afraid and dependent on them. And you can see what they're doing with the economy and our supply chains. Like, they're trying to create food shortages so that they can swoop in and save you. They're going to cry, you know, and for years they've been printing money. Trudeau, of course, was the icing on the cake because he's outspent every single one of the previous premiers, all of them since the beginning of Canada, in his term, in his illegal term. He's not been legitimate since, or his cabinet hasn't been legitimate since they aided and abetted enemies of Canada by voting to reintegrate ISIS fighters back into Canada. So the Liberals have been illegitimate since December 4th, 2017, I believe. They haven't actually been a real government. But there's just no law enforcement. There's nobody in any level of law enforcement or CSIS will do anything about it. So we just have to keep repeating it. We'll use one of their tactics. We'll just keep repeating it until people start accepting it. Except for we're not lying. They always repeat the lies until people think it's fact. We're just repeating the truth until people start actually chewing on it. Anyway, my friends, that's where we're going to end this one. Like always, if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Facebook. It's Canadian Patriot Radio. The message button, you can use it for any material you think is show-worthy, or if you just want to pop in and say hello, feel free. If you prefer email, it's CanadianPatriotRadio@gmail.com. As always, I promote the Telegram room, which is t.me/CPR_2. And if none of that is the way you want to go, then visit the website, which is CanadianPatriotRadio.ca. Just a special notice there. I'm seeing that Google is now really thwarting the searches for Canadian Patriot Radio. So if you are looking for the website, enter two backslashes, Canadian Patriot Radio, all one word, docs.ca/, and then it'll come up. But if you just enter CanadianPatriotRadio.ca into especially Google, you're not going to find it. It just doesn't come up at all. So you got to get those backslashes. So it's backslash CanadianPatriotRadio.ca/, and then it'll come up for you. I just noticed that the other day. I actually searched the website. I was like, I just searched it on Google. I wanted to go to the website for some. I can't remember what I was going to it for. And I couldn't bring it up. So then I manipulated the search, and sure enough, if you got the backslashes in there, she comes up right away. First thing on the page. But just so you know, I'm being suppressed on that front too. Anyway, my friends, until next time, in all thy sons command.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Canadian Patriot Radio. CPR is not filmed before a live studio audience. If you like the show, friends, make sure you give us a thumbs up and share us on all your social media platforms. Until next time, take care.
It's over!